The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Carla Howell. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Carla Howell.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvind Vora, representative at large to the Libertarian National Committee, guest hosting for Carla Howell. On this show, we feature libertarian candidates and elected officials who will explain what they'll do to make your life better and to keep America prosperous, safe, and at peace. Learn more about the Libertarian Party at lp.org and facebook.com/libertarians. On the second half of today's show, you'll hear from John Buckley, libertarian running for Senate in West Virginia. But first, we'll talk with Matt Shutter, the elected libertarian town auditor in Penforest Township, Pennsylvania. Matt Shutter is an elected auditor in Pennsylvania. He was elected to this partisan office in 2013. As a staunch proponent of transparency in government, Matt was shocked to discover that out of a $4 million budget, $1.6 million was unaccounted for. Other government officials have forbidden Matt, the elected town auditor, from being present for audits conducted by independent auditors. Matt Shutter has refused to back down. He's filed criminal complaints and worked to shed light on this situation. A passionate and effective elected official, Matt shows how much difference even one individual can make. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
This is such an amazing story and such an inspiring story, and I really want to start at the beginning. Really, what inspired you originally to run for office?
The Ron Paul 2008 presidential campaign really woke me up and realized that one individual can make a difference.
And you have made a difference. Explain now. You have a $4 million budget there, and that seems like over a third of it is unaccounted for. How is that even possible?
Well, back in 2011, the township supervisors, two of the township supervisors, brought it to the attention of the public about the $1.6 million that was missing. Mm-hmm. The FBI is investigating. They brought it to the FBI. And what happened, how it came to the attention, is the auditing file, they were doing an audit, and the auditing file, all the paperwork went missing. And one of the supervisors said, thank God for the state and computers that we can go back. The state went back into their computer to come up with all the paperwork. Okay. Mm-hmm. But since then, there was a lot of finger pointing. Is the money missing? Who took the money? And like I said, there was a lot of finger pointing of mostly dead past supervisors. They were saying, oh, so-and-so took it, or this person took it. You know, so we could take a look at the situation here and say, A, there is no money missing, and I am bringing attention to a dead man's reputation, and we can put this to bed, or B, that the money is missing, and we're putting light on to the people or a person that took the money.
Now, what exactly has been your role? I mean, what are some of the things that you've done in this process?
Well, my role is very limited right now, okay, because we have an independent CPA that does the audit. But basically what I've been trying to do is go into the township building, ask for different documents. And every time I try to ask for different documents and actually play my role as an elected auditor, they seem to want to call the Pennsylvania State Police on me.
And they have called
saying that I'm being disorderly. There was four different times that the Pennsylvania State Police were called on me from Penn Forest Township Municipal Building, and four different times there was no charges pressed.
That is amazing. I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that your role is limited, because from where I'm sitting, it sounds like your role is anything but limited. It sounds like you are, in many ways, what most of us wish that all of our elected officials were, you know, an advocate for the people, an advocate for honesty, an advocate for transparency. You know, the fact that you've been willing to stand up, you know, I think that
You know, I did take an oath to the Pennsylvania Constitution, the United States Constitution, during my campaign, and on Election Day, I handed out Pennsylvania constitutions. Mm-hmm. Also, back in November, I ran for Jim Thorpe School Board. And what I did tell people, I will not violate this document. Everything else is up for grab, but the Pennsylvania Constitution and the United States Constitution is my contract with the people of Jim Thorpe and Penn Forest Township. Okay, and when I did take my oath of office, I sworn on both documents. Okay, so I take my oath very seriously, and I think every elected officer should. And that's a problem that we have in government. If they can't take a basic oath to the Constitution, how are we going to have good government?
I mean, I think that's. I think you pretty much hit the nail right on the head there. It is incredible that it's what you're really doing. Essentially, is just doing what, you know, ideally some people are just supposed to do who are elected officials. And the fact that you are one of the rare ones that actually does any of these things, you know, really just is almost mind-boggling. It really, you know, throws a totally different perspective on some of this material. You know, in addition to, you know, what you're doing right now, you know, you're also considering, you know, speaking of law, speaking of the police, you're also considering actually in an upcoming election running for sheriff. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Next year, I will be running for sheriff as the Libertarian candidate.
Now, a lot of, and this is the thing that I think that a lot of people don't really know. They don't actually realize that a sheriff has, you know, that's a pretty significant position. You know, a sheriff has quite a bit of power to really defend individual rights, you know, to uphold the Constitution. You know, what are some of the things that a sheriff, you know, if you were elected sheriff, what are some of the things that you could do?
Well, what I could do is if there's a warrant out for arrest and the arrest warrant is for a charge of a victimless crime, say the person was caught, okay, with a quarter ounce of marijuana or something like that, but there was no victim. You know, the victim is that person, okay? Mm-hmm. I could refuse to do that arrest warrant. Okay, if there is no crime, if there is no victim, there is no crime. Okay, that's one thing a sheriff can do. And the sheriff is basically
let me just actually go back to that real quick. I mean, that is you know, that's a pretty you know, pretty bold and pretty powerful thing to say, and coming from somebody that's already repeatedly stood up to other parts of government as an elected official, you know, it carries a lot of weight coming from you. Go through that. So what you're saying is that even if there's a warrant issued for the arrest, a sheriff in theory has the power to just refuse to arrest the person.
That's correct. What I would do if I was lucky enough to be elected to Carbon County Sheriff is, and there was a warrant for a person in my county for, like I said, a marijuana charge, I would go to the judge and say, "Who's the victim, Your Honor? Didn't you take the same oath I did, Your Honor, to protect the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Pennsylvania?" You know, where is the victim? The victim is the individual. Doesn't that person have a right to put into their body what they see fit? You know, and what I would stress to the judge is that he took the same oath. I would want to know where under the Constitution this arrest warrant, okay, has its authority. It doesn't. So I would tell the judge, I refuse. because I'm supposed to protect the people of Carbon County's rights under the Constitution of Pennsylvania. And so is that judge.
Absolutely, and that's really, you know, we put so much, you know, just the average person, we put so much emphasis on the really, you know, like federal elections, and obviously those are extremely important, but really, you know, county level elections, there's so much that a dedicated defender of the Constitution, someone who's really dedicated to looking out for individual rights, can really accomplish over there. We have this one thing that a sheriff can do, which is as an example, if there's a small drug charge, just refuse to serve the warrant. What else could that allow?
Well, you know, not so much right now, but we're recovering. But Carbon County is still in an economic downfall. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're seeing day-to-day a lot of sheriff sales, okay? Mm-hmm. So somebody has a foreclosure on their home, and the bank didn't go through the proper procedure, mm-hmm. okay? The sheriff could refuse to foreclose on the person's home. Hey, we bailed out the banks, but do we bail out the individual? Do we, you know, in the United States, you know, what we have is a corporate government, you know, phony corporatism, mm-hmm. okay, not a free market. So also a sheriff can look at it and say, you know, yes, the bank or no, the bank. And if the answer is no, go to that judge and say, the bank did not follow the proper procedure, Your Honor, mm-hmm. and I'm here to protect Mr. X and Mrs. X, or just Mr. X or Miss X. Mm-hmm. Okay, so right under the Pennsylvania Constitution, again, you would say to the judge, didn't you take the same oath? Where does the bank have the authority to do this? So there's a lot of different things, you know, a sheriff can do. Basically, the sheriff is an elected supreme law enforcement officer mm-hmm. of the county, and he is there to make sure that our rights as Americans are protected. I'd like to go even further if I can. Okay,
Let's go further right after this break, because I want to, you know, this is such an important topic and I really want to make sure we give it the proper amount of time. So let's come back to this in just a couple minutes. We're talking with Matt Shutter, the elected Libertarian town auditor in Penn Forest Township, Pennsylvania, who is also going to be seeking election as sheriff in the upcoming election. He aims to bring transparency and fiscal responsibility to local government, which he's been doing already. And as sheriff, he intends to protect individual rights by, among other things, refusing to serve warrants for victimless crimes, for example, possessions of a small amount of marijuana. You can connect with him at facebook.com/Matthew.Shutter. That's SCHUTTER.1. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party. And please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. You can choose to get active, meet great libertarians in your area, and learn ways you can get involved. Help us improve transparency, defend individuals, and downsize big government. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvin Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
I'm your host for today, Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking with Matt Shutter, the elected Libertarian town auditor in Penforest Township, Pennsylvania. You can connect with him at facebook.com/matthew.shutter.1. Matt, let's continue talking about your planned run for sheriff and what are some of the things that you could do as sheriff to protect individual rights.
Well, you know, back in 2012, our Congress and President Obama passed a bill for the National Authorization Act, okay, which they do every year, or the National Defense Authorization Act. Every year they do pass this, and it's a defense of that, you know, to give provisions on our military. But what was happening in 2012 was 1022 and 1022 of amendments of that bill are they put language in that the war on terror is global, and the war on terror could be in American citizens, and they put provisions in there that people would lose their rights if one person had suspected of you being a terrorist, and that's the President of the United States.
Okay, so you're saying
that's
the President of the United States
could... because a terrorist is an act. We're at war with an act. You know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Now, okay, as sheriff, what I can do is I can fight the federal government, and I have the authority under the Constitution to do this. So say you're a person in my county is claimed to be a domestic terrorist. Okay, I can say, you know, what do you got against him? I can stand up and protect that person's rights, and if the federal government did not get warrants to search the person's houses or did not have probable cause or a lot of different things, I can kick the federal government out of my county and say, not here.
So,
and that's the difference between a constitutional sheriff and your regular sheriff. Constitutional sheriffs will stand up and fight for your rights and fight for what the rule of law is, which is the Constitution.
So what you're saying over here is not that you would never, you know, try to, if somebody, if there was a legitimate warrant, you know, obviously you'd enforce that. But what you're saying is, if in total violation of the Fourth Amendment, with no warrant, with no due process, with none of the things that the Revolutionary War was fought for, with none of those, if the government tries to bypass all of those, what you're going to say is, we fought the Revolutionary War for this amendment, and I'm going to stand by this constitutional amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and insist on due process for every single person in the county.
Absolutely.
That, I think, is just such an incredibly powerful statement, and I think that's something that's going to really resonate with a lot of people, because the, I mean, when we see the response to, you know, the NSA warrantless surveillance and the Patriot Act warrantless surveillance and all these different types of warrantless surveillance, you know, that's not really what America's about. It's not what the Constitution's about. It's not what any of those things are about. Tell us a little bit more. Let's go back a little bit to the present. I mean, what you're planning to share sounds amazing, but what you're actually doing right now as a township auditor is also pretty amazing. Let's talk a little bit more about what's happening over there right now.
Okay. You know, like I said, you know, basically I'm trying to find out if the money is missing or not. Okay. I do know in February of 2013 that the township supervisors voted to shred documents, financial documents, and they did not specify what documents they were going to shred, and supposedly they put them on microfiche. Now, I filed a right to know with the township to find out what documents were shredded, and I would also like to see the microfiche documents. Mm-hmm. Never got a response from the township. Every time I questioned, okay, what documents were shredded, again, the Pennsylvania State Police were called. You know, there's several times. Also, when I first got elected, the township solicitor asked me to meet with the Board of Supervisors and themselves. And, you know, when I first got elected, you know, they were late with the 2012 audit, 10 months late, and I requested, which I had the Wilkes-Barre Independent Gazette with me, a reporter from the Independent Gazette. I requested to meet with the CPA firm and see if I can sit in on the audit, just to observe. Their response was, I'll see what I can do for you, which that person that said that was Butch Reiner, the chairman of the township supervisors. About 25 minutes later, the Pennsylvania State Police were there. That was a response. But to get back to what I was saying about the township solicitor asking me to meet, okay, and see if we can come up with an agreement, get to introduce each other, you know, get to know each other. And I asked the township board why, at that time, were they, you know, were the police called on me? And their response was, their number one job was to protect employees. And they were afraid that I was going to come into the township and shoot the place up. Now, about 20 miles south of here, about 10 months ago, there was a resident that came into a township and did shoot the place up in Rush Township, Pennsylvania. You know, and I was a little offended at that comment, and I said to the supervisor that said that, you know, do you have any proof, okay, that I'm going to go and shoot the place up? Did I ever make any threats, violent accusations? Because if there did, I'd be surprised, because I took an oath not to use force or fraud to gain my political way. And the person responded, I don't need proof. Your reputation precedes you. And I was like, what reputation are we talking about? The reputation that honors the Constitution and stands up for what's right? He goes, yeah, that's what reputation we're talking about. And I reminded the, you know, the Board of Supervisors that Article 1, Section 21 states that the rights of the people to keep and bear arms in defense of themselves and the state shall not be questioned. I also questioned the board when I said, and state. I asked them, what do you think that means? Because you took the same oath I did. I think it means to stand up for our rights and protect our state. If the government wants to be tyrannical, you know, federal government, we have a duty to stand up and fight them with every means possible.
And so, you know, we're actually talking about, just to make sure it's clear to the listener, we're talking about you who, as a libertarian, have taken the libertarian oath, which is not to use force or fraud to obtain, you know, for political purposes. You're right. Also the elected town auditor, where it is ostensibly your job to make sure that this stuff is done in some sort of a correct or transparent or, you know, timely or, and,
right.
And the response has been to basically stonewall you. Or to each even call the police on you, who obviously never arrested him. There's no charges filed because you didn't, there's nothing to file charges on. And
yeah,
it seemed,
though, the last time that there was, they did call the cops. I did have a trooper say the next time that I come into the township building, I will be arrested. Yeah, I got a phone call by that trooper, and I asked the trooper on what charges, and the trooper said disorderly conduct. Now, in Pennsylvania, there's two different charges for disorderly conduct. One could be a misdemeanor, and one could be a summary offense. And that's what I asked him, which charge would that be? And he said summary offense. And I asked him, well, you know, you weren't there at the time. You know, what is your evidence? You know, what do you have against me? He said, I don't need any. Well, at that, you know, I asked that trooper to recite his oath to me over the phone. He could not. Okay. And I said to him, you know, please do charge me. And I said some few foul words and called him a Nazi, pushing to the point that he would charge me with something because I love to get that Nazi in court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because what that officer did was called official oppression. Okay. He's using his badge to bully me, okay? And also the township is using official oppression to bully me and harass me from doing my elected duties. Now, for official oppression to be used, it doesn't have to be to an elected officer. It can be anybody. So, you know, when we see videos of the police doing things like using tasering people while they're cuffed, using excessive force, that's called official oppression. And I believe it's in most states, but here in Pennsylvania, the citizen has a right, okay, to, you can look up on the internet, it's called a private criminal complaint. You have to do a little homework, but Title 18 is the criminal titles, okay. If you do a little homework, you can get the section and title and file a private criminal complaint with your local district attorney's office.
Mm-hmm.
And your district attorney has to approve it or disapprove it, you know, or deny it. If it's denied, they got to give you a reason why it's denied and how to appeal. Here in Pennsylvania, you would appeal to, you know, the clerk of courts, okay, and you can file an appeal. There's some fees for that, okay, and you will have a judge hear your case.
So that's,
you know, the Constitution gives us provisions on fighting tyranny, you know, fighting the wrong thing. And that's what I did say to that officer, you know, you're very, you're using your title, you're using your badge, you're in violation of official oppression, and if you don't stop it, I will go down to the courthouse and file claims against you.
And that's
your
really
badge does not give you, you know, you're not above the rule of law.
Exactly, and that's a really powerful message that I think you've really made clear, that the that even the state, even the government has to follow the laws, and those laws are codified in the Constitution, both in the state Constitution and the federal Constitution. Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And if I can give a shout-out, on May 14th in Jim Thorpe, PA, we do have a Facebook page up. We are doing a fundraiser for Ken Kwiatkowski, our governor candidate, for the Libertarian Party, and I would appreciate people looking at the Facebook page for that.
Sounds good. All right, and you can connect with Matthew at facebook.com/matthew.shutter.1. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In today's society, there is just too much competition. Women are taking on the same roles as men. They're working side by side, competing for the same positions. What is happening? This is transferring to how men and women feel about each other and relationships. We're delaying marriages or not even getting married at all. It's time to go back to basics. Listen for this groundbreaking show with host Naftali Schwartz. But it's not really that groundbreaking. It's just a new way of looking at things. Tune in Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Emotional intelligence has been documented to be the most important skill for a leader to move up in an organization. Leader's Playbook will unpack what emotional intelligence is, why it is important, and how you can raise your emotional intelligence for yourself, your direct reports, and your teams. Join Dr. Relly Nadler every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, to the Leader's Playbook on the Voice America Business Channel. Your success could depend on it.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You, where we feature libertarian candidates working to make your life better by downsizing big government and expanding your freedom. I'm Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. For the second half of our show, we'll bring on John Buckley, the libertarian running for U.S. Senate in West Virginia. John Buckley has been dedicated to the principles of limited government for decades, ever since he was a freshman in high school in the 1960s. In fact, he was the national chairman of Young Americans for Freedom, which was founded in 1960. He has also worked at the American Conservative Union, the National Tax Limitation Committee, the Cato Institute, the Institute for Humane Studies, and the Law and Economic Center of the George Mason University School of Law. He has practiced law, served as a senior law clerk to the chief judge of the court, and is acting clerk of the court, which is the chief administrative officer of the court. He has even served a term in the Virginia House of Delegates. He is dedicated to reducing government interference in personal and economic life. You can learn more about him at johnbuckley.org. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Arvin. I'm very glad to be here. This is a big election year in the United States and in West Virginia. Important issues abound, and I think the Libertarian Party is going to be offering the public a very, very important opportunity to make a choice for less government.
Now, what are some of the areas where the Libertarian platform and where your specific platform really gives some benefit to the average person?
Arvin, it's across the board. Really, when the major party primaries and the smoke clears this year and the Democratic Party primaries and the Republican Party primaries for Congress and U.S. Senate, House of Representatives, I think the public's going to realize that the Libertarian Party is the only political party whose candidates across the board are offering the choice of less government, whether you're talking about taxes and spending, whether you're talking about personal and civil liberties and privacy, whether you're talking about national defense and foreign policy. I think the Libertarian Party candidates are the only ones standing up for principles that were basic to the conception of the United States that we're trying to go forward with to bring more freedom back to the people of this country.
Absolutely. Now, what are some of the key issues that if you say you're elected, what are some of the issues that you'd be focusing on? What are some of the types of legislation that you would sponsor?
Well, let's start with taxes and spending. The most important thing facing the United States is the prospect that we're going to economically bankrupt ourselves with continuing overspending, entitlement spending, and burdensome and heavy taxes. So cutting taxes is critical. Across the board, tax cuts are very important to giving a boost to the economy. You know, we're 5 years into the so-called recovery from the recession at the end of the Bush administration. And under President Obama, even though we're 5 years into a recovery, this recovery is so anemic that our unemployment rates are skyrocketing. They're still much higher than they ought to be. And that's because the president and the Congress in general has not adopted pro-growth economic policies. So across-the-board tax cuts are very important. But equally important is to focus on spending, because it's the amount of spending by the United States federal government that's more important even than the actual tax rates, because the government overspends. And the overspending burdens the American people, whether it's through the continued interest on the growing national debt, whether it's through the papering the economy with money from the Federal Reserve that will ultimately lead to runaway inflation. These are all costs that the American people are going to bear unless we get federal spending under control.
So, now, if we do get, if we do get that federal spending under control and we do cut taxes, what are some of the benefits that people will see either right away or in a couple of months or years in the future?
Well, sure, a good question. That's the that is important, because to talk about cutting spending, to talk about cutting taxes as sort of an academic inquiry doesn't bring home to the average citizen what they're going to get out of these improvements to our economic posture. When we cut taxes and we cut spending, we do two things. When you cut taxes, you put money back, or you leave money back in the pockets of the average citizen. The average citizen knows better how to prioritize the needs of their households, of their families, whether it's spending money on high utility bills after a harsh through a harsh winter, or affording the increased cost of groceries at the store, whether it's helping to pay off the student loans or saving for one's future, a little bit put away for the nest egg for retirement, or, as most Americans do, helping our fellow man voluntarily. These are things that when you leave money back in the pockets and the treasury, the bank accounts of the average citizen, they're able to spend their money more wisely than remote and often dictatorial bureaucrats in Washington. There's a practical benefit to cutting taxes. Cutting spending is the same thing. When the federal government takes on so many programs, A, that are unconstitutional, and B, that the federal government runs so incompetently, it takes choices away from the households of America. You know, I think the people, my neighbors in my community, know better if they had the resources left to them to spend for their kids' education, to spend for helping the people in need in our community. And these are the practical benefits. When we talk about less government, we mean more liberty, more responsibility, and more empowerment for the average citizen in our towns and our communities.
I mean, that I think really strikes home to a lot of people. I mean, I think most people recognize that with more money, they could afford better education, they could do more, more charity, they could support the arts. There's so much that they could do and would do if they had that ability. What are some of the other issues? You know, cutting taxes and spending is that's a huge one. But what else are you looking at?
Well, because the Libertarian Party and Libertarian candidates are the only ones who are consistently making the case for limited constitutional government, that also brings up issues of privacy, Fourth Amendment searches and seizures, government surveillance, the actions of the National Security Agency, the invasions of privacy and private property that go along, for instance, with the federal war on drugs. Similarly, in national defense and foreign policy, we are trying to do to the world what big government is trying to do within the United States, be both big brother and big nanny, and we're trying to do that to the world. And I think that our foreign policy and our national defense ought to focus solely, primarily, but effectively on defending our country. The world is a dangerous place, and we need a strong and vigorous national defense, but it should be limited to that principle, to that idea of defending the country, not trying to make the world over in our image. As one of our, I think it was President John Quincy Adams said, we should be the friends of liberty everywhere, but we're the guardians of our own liberty. And I think that would limit the adventurism in American foreign policy, and again, allow us to reduce federal spending, allow us to reduce taxes, and it all then leaves the average citizen more empowered to live their own lives. You know, everybody's different, and everybody has different goals in life. We need to let citizens realize their ideals and their dreams by empowering them.
What about safety? And what about safety and security? If we reduce military spending, will that make the average citizen safer or less safe?
Well, if we reduce it in the right way, we'll be safer because we need a national defense. And if we spend the money in the right way, the adequate troops, properly trained, properly equipped, with sent out on missions that are properly defined to defend our country and defend our interests, we will get better defense, and we will make ourselves, we will make better friends across the world if we focus on defending our country rather than intruding in the affairs across the world that may be well-intentioned, but go far beyond the defense of the national interest of the United States.
So what you're basically saying is that by reducing spending, we're actually going to allow us, the average American, to be significantly safer because we're going to be creating fewer, you know, less hostility, as well as focusing all our resources on this one task instead of dividing our focus among 10,000 other things that have nothing to do with actually defending ourselves. Now, you also alluded briefly to privacy. Now, privacy has become a huge issue in America right now. What would you do in terms of defending privacy?
Well, for instance, the National Security Agency has been in the news a lot in the last, over the year, and especially as, within the last several months, with the revelation that the National Security Agency has been collecting telephone, what's called metadata, the data not on the substance of the call, but who you called and when you called and how long the call lasted and who called whom and who called that person, and all this data purportedly in order to protect the country from terrorism. But these are invasions of the privacy rights of the American citizen as guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment. And I think that we need to bring back our defense and intelligence agencies to their proper role, defending us against foreign threats, but respecting the privacy rights as guaranteed by the Constitution. So when the NSA, when this revelation came out and the director of national the national intelligence went before the United States Senate, and he was asked about this metadata, and he denied that they were collecting it. And then when the revelations came out that, in fact, the NSA was collecting this data, when he was asked again about his apparently false statements to the United States Senate, he admitted the lie. He admitted it by saying that he gave an answer that was the least untruthful that he could think of. In other words, that he had lied. And I think we need to bring back the NSA and the other spy agencies, amalgamate them into one effective agency with proper restraints, and we'll get better defense, and we'll get better protection against terrorism, and we'll also respect the constitutional rights of the American citizen.
That I think is a really powerful message, and it's really something that I think is so central to so many people's minds, both because obviously these things cost money, but also they really violate a very fundamental right, a very fundamental constitutional right that this country has really been built on. We're talking with John Buckley, the Libertarian for U.S. Senate running in West Virginia. You can learn more about him at johnbuckley.org. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party, and please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. You can choose to get active, meet great libertarians in your area, and learn ways that you can get involved. Help us increase freedom, reduce spending, and downsize big government. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvin Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. We're talking with John Buckley, the Libertarian running for U.S. Senate in West Virginia. You can learn more about him at johnbuckley.org. John, in the last segment, we talked about privacy and we talked about reducing spending. Now, one of the issues that really relates to both privacy and spending is the war on drugs. Where do you stand on the war on drugs?
Well, I got to say, first of all, I'm like most every American. I don't really think that the use of these of a lot of these drugs is very good for society, and we certainly don't want our young people to go off in the direction and thinking that ending the war on drugs is an invitation to behaviors that are detrimental. But the war on drugs is like other federal wars; it's become a vast failure. Like the war on poverty, spending billions. The war on drugs has gone on well through my adult lifetime. And as a practical matter, we have to recognize it has failed. It's ruinously expensive. It's led to precedents on search and seizure and invasion of privacy that are contrary to our constitutional liberties. And it simply has failed to diminish the onslaught of drugs in our communities. One of the reasons is because, like prohibition of alcohol in the 1930s, the war on drugs has made it profitable for criminal gangs to pursue this dangerous trade. And I think if we step back and recognize the practical failures of the war on drugs, we can begin to take a new approach. Let's call a ceasefire, and let's try a new approach that will respect our privacies, respect our liberties, save an awful lot of money for the American taxpayer, and be more effective at discouraging the scourge of drug use.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the benefits that, you know, suppose I say, you know, I don't do drugs personally, how does this benefit me? Why would any war on drugs benefit me?
Exactly right, because I'm in that same boat of my generation. I don't know, I may be one of the few people that I know that can say I've never tried marijuana. I'm not in favor of drugs, but take crime. You know, the other day as I was heading out on a campaign stop, I stopped at the local vet to board my dog for a couple of days. And there in conversation as we were doing the paperwork, I find out that one of the receptionists had recently had her home broken into. There's been a spate of break-ins in the community. And it turns out, as the police have finally caught the perpetrators, that this is drug-induced. These are people who are stealing in order to afford a drug habit that they were suckered into by criminal gangs who saw that illegal drugs was a profitable criminal endeavor. So we will reduce crime, which affects everybody in a community. That's a practical measure that I think will benefit everybody if we take a new approach to the war on drugs. Another practical matter is simply spending and easing the burden on taxpayers. The war on drugs is catastrophically expensive. The amount of money that is spent all the time at every level of government fighting the drug elements has gotten out of control and to no effective outcome. And I think that that's another reason that we will see benefits by taking a new approach to the war on drugs. And I explore some of these matters, and you've mentioned my website, johnbuckley.org. I've also explored some of these matters on my Facebook page, John Buckley, which is facebook.com/johnbuckleywv. These are some of the practical ways in which a new approach to the war on drugs benefits the average citizen. Take health, for example, is another area. If we start to treat drug abuse as a health matter, we can focus resources more effectively on the people that we need to help out of their addictions and into a more effective and healthy lifestyles. But we're spending money wastefully on things that aren't achieving a proper good.
Yeah, and I mean, right now we have a situation where people are often afraid to get help. When they themselves want to get help with the drug problem, they're often afraid to get help because they're afraid of the criminal consequences. And in the system you're proposing where we stop criminalizing it and allow people to get the help that they individually want to get, it seems like it's a beneficial situation for everybody. Now, you've also talked about different areas in which spending can be cut. What are some of the areas in which we could just start cutting spending? What are some of the more interesting areas over there?
Sure. There's lots of examples you can give. I mean, constitutionally, I think someone who has a limited government philosophy and an understanding of the intent of the American Constitution and the way that our government was set up would realize that certain federal departments as an entirety don't belong, aren't proper functions of the federal government. The Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, these are entire fields that ought to be left to people in their communities at the local and state level to deal with those kinds of issues and those problems. Mm-hmm. So those are, and then of course, as everyone recognizes, entitlements are the biggest, one of the biggest areas of the federal spending in which we've got to get a handle if we're going to bring the deficit down and reduce the footprint of the federal government. But there are small examples as well, and I like to take the example. People may have read of the efforts in New York City years ago to combat the crime in Times Square and other areas. And it was called the broken window syndrome. You have a neighborhood, an area that's got a lot of crime, and you'll see broken windows, and you'll see trash, and you'll see criminal elements. And a lot of smart crime fighters realize that you need to do everything, but one of the things you need to do is take on the small things. If there's a broken window in a blighted neighborhood, you fix the window and you clean up the trash. Well, we can do the same thing in spending as well. It may not be the big ticket item, but there are small items like, well, take the Export-Import Bank. The government subsidizes private industries in the United States, subsidizes the loans so that American businesses can sell their products overseas. But if those products overseas, if that was an effective market, the private sector could handle that without putting the American taxpayer on the hook.
Exactly.
Take flood zones. We're trying to rein in the excessive exposure of the American taxpayer due to federal flood zone insurance. So there was an effort by Congress to bring federal flood insurance up to market levels. Well, first of all, the federal government shouldn't be in the business of flood insurance, but at least the effort to bring it up to market rates was better. But the intention that Congress saw, they undercut recently by delaying the bringing the rates up to market levels. And I guess this is because of the pressure of the protecting the mega mansions on the Florida Gulf Coast or places of that where people have huge mega mansions and they get destroyed by hurricanes. And they want the American taxpayer to pick up the bill to rebuild their homes. Well, I don't think the average taxpayer should be on the hook for that. I don't think the people in my state should be paying for somebody else's flood zone insurance. And so these are small areas, but they add up to a lot. And when you start to bring these small areas together, one, they will themselves save money, but two, they'll bring home to the American people and their representatives in Congress how important it is to tackle the big spending reductions as well. We don't need to subsidize Amtrak trains for lobbyists to go back and forth from Washington to New York City. We don't need to subsidize national public radio when we have an internet that's full of opportunities to get news and keep up with the times. So these are small examples, but they're ones of, I'm sure you could list hundreds if everybody got together and came up with their pet peeve of wasteful government spending. So I take the broken window syndrome and I apply that to spending as well. If the United States Congress right now can't end subsidies for something like flood zone insurance and Amtrak for businessmen and national public radio, then how are we ever going to tackle the big spending issues that are bedeviling the country? You know, it's going to take a libertarian getting into the United States Congress, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate, to bring home to the powers that be if the American people really do want to cut spending and cut taxes and cut the size of the federal government. We don't need the federal government telling us at the state and local level how to live our lives.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think the fact that you, if elected, would be over there able to sponsor legislation and relentlessly push for that will make a humongous difference. John Buckley, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Delighted. Just tell people to go to johnbuckley.org.
Definitely will do that. Okay, we've been talking with John Buckley, the Libertarian running for U.S. Senate in West Virginia. His website is johnbuckley.org. That's johnbuckley.org. The Libertarian Party and its candidates are working to reduce the size, scope, authority, taxation, and spending of big government so that you are safer, more free, less taxed, so that the world is at peace, so that you and every American enjoys the greatest opportunity and prosperity possible. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party. And please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. Help us reduce military spending, cut your taxes, and make government small. That's lp.org and facebook.com/libertarians. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Carla Howell again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.